Tēnā koutou katoa e whakarongo mai ki te reo irirangi o te hiku o te ika. I tēnei wāhanga e kōrero ana hao ki a Sean Hendy. Tēnā koe, Sean.
Tēnā koe, Kenny.
Wow, so we've had no cases for the past couple of days. We're now in level 2. Sean, you guys have been doing a lot of work te punaha matatini and advising the government and, you know, how we should respond to the COVID situation. Are you going to go off on your domestic holiday now and take a break?
No, unfortunately my teaching starts next week.
Oh,
I'd quite like to take a bit of a holiday actually, just a bit of a break. Yeah. You know, my parents are in Dunedin, so that'll be the first place we probably go down and see my parents. We'll probably wait a little while. You know, I got my teaching, that'll keep me busy for about a month. And by then I think we'll have a good idea about whether we have eliminated the disease or not. Mm. I think it's still too early to tell at the moment. I mean, it's great to have those 0 days, but you probably want to have about 2 weeks of zeros,
right,
before you decide that we've actually got rid of it.
So is Te Punaha Matatini, are you guys still doing some work on this in terms of modeling?
Yeah, we're still doing a lot of different bits of modeling. In fact, the requests for different types of modeling are coming in thick and fast.
From the government.
Early on, it was from the government and from other people as well. People working on apps and things want to know, you know, how well their app will work in given situations. And so we're getting requests from people like that. I mean, early on, it was kind of really, in some ways, it was quite simple because we, you know, it was clear who was making the decisions. And now a lot of those decisions are coming back to us, you know, communities and individuals and businesses. We're getting a wider variety of requests from people who want to understand different aspects of what could happen, you know, what are the possibilities.
And are they... I mean, you guys are a research center of excellence. So is this, I mean, do you guys just do this work because the community reaches out to you, or are some of them paying you guys to do this work?
Yeah, no one's paying us at the moment.
Right. but you're funded for this sort of work though, right?
Yeah. So well, no, not really. So early on, I realized that we were not going to be spending any money on travel this year. You know, That was back in early March, and I thought, okay, well, chances are, you know, no one's going to be traveling overseas. We're probably not going to be getting together for a hui this year face to face. So it's actually going to save us some money. So we put that money, first of all, into the COVID modeling. And we've been asking the government for support to, you know, so that we can respond to everybody's requests. We've been trying to do our best to do that. But actually, the money is starting to run out. so I'm hoping the government will come back.
You weren't included
and
in
give that. Us some more funding soon.
Yeah, right. So you weren't included in that $50 billion then.
No, unfortunately,
it might have been in the space somewhere.
So,
so you guys are still. You guys
hopefully
still.
In the next couple of weeks, we'll get some additional.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's definitely well deserved. I think there's no doubt about it. The whole country has been able to see the work that you guys have been doing. I mean, you guys have done a good job communicating that to communities, and I mean, we're seeing the results, right? We're seeing the results of New Zealand being very proactive on this and taking the advice from our experts and making good decisions on that. So you are still modeling now, right? And I'm curious what those models are now, because obviously they're different than before. We were trying to calculate, you know, how fast is this thing going to grow. We want to know when are we certain this thing isn't coming back.
So we've been looking at that kind of situation, is how can we be sure that we've eliminated the disease. We've also been trying to make the models more structured. So that, for example, we could the model can tell us the difference between how it might spread in central Auckland versus South Auckland, for example. You know, in South Auckland, you've got people living in quite crowded conditions. You know, and central Auckland as well, people living in apartment buildings. versus maybe you know, up your way, where you know, you're more spread out, you're further away from a bigger population center, but maybe you haven't got good access to testing or doctors, and you might have to take time off to go to hospital somewhere in some other part of the country. You know, so we're trying to capture those kind of effects as to how the disease, if we had a secondary outbreak, how it might affect different communities in different ways. And so that's been really important work that we've been putting a lot of effort into, you know, because the government needs to think it can't just treat everybody the same, right? It's got responsibilities under Te Tiriti to ensure that every, you know, outcomes are equitable across different populations and different communities in New Zealand. And it can't do that by treating everybody exactly the same way. So that's an important thing to capture. And there was a really, you know, I think we talked about this in Singapore, where they have a big migrant worker community that's housed in these quite crowded dormitories. They don't have good, they're not employed under good conditions. So they might not want to risk not going to work if they feel sick, because they'll lose. You know, they'll lose a couple of weeks' pay if they get a test and have to self isolate. And it's very hard to self isolate if you're living in a crowded dormitory anyway. And so that led to a big secondary outbreak, which is still going on in Singapore. Mm. And we don't want that kind of thing to happen in Aotearoa.
Right. And I think there was a similar situation in Montreal, where it's, you know, they've had quite a severe outbreak there. And there's a huge migrant community who are, you know, they're living in poverty, they're living in crowded facilities, they're working multiple jobs, and they work, you know, they're working at care homes in some instances and becoming vectors of transmission.
Yeah, no, that's right. So now we're trying to capture that kind of detail. Our initial models, you know, were just very broad brush and didn't have those kind of effects built in. And now we've got the ability to capture that and really advise the government on how they need to act to prevent that happening.
And now that they're allowing Māori to have tangi, will that factor into these models as well in terms of looking at our Māori communities? How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, so one of our students is looking at that, looking at the different ways that, you know, that people interact. You know, we know from some of those clusters, if you think of some of the clusters that were found early on, you know, they were big, they were events where lots of people came together. You know, there was the wedding in Bluff, there was the conference in Queenstown, there was the St. Patrick's Day celebration. And you know, those kind of events, you know, they are high risk events, and so trying to understand, well, how can you hold those events and make them safer for people? Because obviously those sorts of things, you know, particularly tangi, are hugely important, and we do want to be able to have them safely, but we want to understand, well, what can we do to make them to make them safer?
Because presumably, if everyone just I mean, in those cases, they might not have known or really cared too much about COVID, right? It was sort of not really a thing. But now we very much know it is serious and it is here. And so that would obviously change how we interact in these group gatherings. And so surely our transmission rates within those settings could go down.
Yeah, if we can, you know, people can take precautions. You know, there's making sure you wash your hands, you know, potentially using masks. You know, I think you've got to assume it's out there. Although we're seeing these zero case days, the modelling still suggests there might be a small number of chains of transmission still going that we haven't discovered. You know, it's possible that there's not, that we have contained or eliminated it now, right? Some of our modeling says there's a chance that's happened, but there's also a chance that we've still got some of these chains going, and you know, and they might not stop for a couple of weeks, or they could come back and bite us. And so you do have to act as if you think it might be out there. And that means being cautious.
So how long do you reckon we'll be in this level two, or what, in terms of the data, what do you think the government will be looking for before deciding it's now safe to move to level one?
Yeah, I mean, I think the criteria we've been using is just, how long, 2 weeks of zero cases, right? Because the disease has this incubation period of about a week. For most people, it takes about 5 days for you to develop symptoms. The part of the problem is that not everybody develops symptoms. There's a fraction of people who never feel unwell, but they're still contagious, and that's what makes the disease so. What's made it so hard to stop, right? Is that people can have it, not be aware of it at all, but still be passing it on to others. And it's only when someone else gets sick, right, that you find out about those cases. And so you kind of have to wait a certain period of time, and number of days with no new cases, before you can be really sure that those sort of hidden chains of transmission have stopped. We know that under level four, that would have been really effective at stopping those chains. Level three, not quite so much. And level two, probably not very good,
right?
and so if there are some of these things out there and we're not cautious, they've got the possibility to to have another outbreak. One of the things we've been looking at most recently is how contact tracing, how well contact tracing needs to work. So that's when someone does come down with symptoms, they get a test, and then the public health units try and figure out who that person has been in contact with, so that they can get tests to those people, and those people can go home and self-isolate. And so we've been trying to understand, well, how fast do you have to be with that contact tracing in order to be able to isolate people, including the people who might be infectious. And we've been trying to build that into the model.
Interesting.
And if it works well enough, we think we could stay at level two. We'd be able to contain, if we discover any of these hidden chains of transmission, because someone finally develops symptoms and goes to get a test, then we think contact tracing at the moment, while these numbers are small enough, could let us live at level two for a while, even if we discover these hidden chains.
So if so if out of nowhere we find someone has COVID and we don't know how they got it, it's just one of these, we'll say, sort of quiet scenarios. We have you're saying that you guys have a way to estimate how much people probably also have COVID because they've been moving around in the community undetected for a while, and so immediately by finding that one person, we could probably safely assume there are a few more people who have it. But if we have contact tracing in place, we can dampen how fast that's going to grow and bring us back down to our sort of level two scenario.
Yeah, without us having to go back into lockdown.
Right.
I think that's the concern, is that if we have to go back into lockdown again, lockdown was really effective. We know it worked, but it was also really hard for everybody.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have lost their jobs, and so we don't want to have to do that again. So we're hoping, and we think that contact tracing can do that job of stopping us having to go back into lockdown should there be another secondary outbreak.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much for your time, Sean. It was great having another kōrero with you. I think this will be our last in a while, but we will probably be reaching out in the future just to get more advice from you in terms of COVID-19 and how this situation plays out.
Well, it's been great to collaborate with you too, Keone, and it's been really good to be able to give you guys updates on a weekly basis as we've gone through this.
Tēnā koe, Sean, mō ēnei kōrero. Tēnā hoki koto e te ui ko hono mai nei ki te iku media. Ko Sean Heni tērā, he mātanga pūtai awa Sean no Aotearoa. Ke tau mai anō nā manaakitanga o te wāhi ngaro kia tātou katoa. Ko Keone Mahelo nā hau, mō te Hiku Media, noho ora mai.